Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. I believe every lie that I ever told. Paid for every heart that I ever stole. I played my cards and I didn't fold. Well, it ain't that hard when you got sold. Somewhere I heard that life is a test. I've been through the worst, but I still get my best. God made my mold different from the rest. Then he broke that mold, so I know I'm blessed. Stand up now and face the sun. Won't hide my tail or turn and run. It's time to do what must be done. Be a king when kingdom comes. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are listening to this live on podcast. Thank you for joining us for another edition of Brother to Brother with Dr. Nate Chapman and Dr. Keelan Hinton, where we are here for all of your mental health, love, relationship, attachment, and community needs. For those that would like to participate in the show, you can contact us at B2B Psych. That's B, the number 2, B, PSYCH. That's B2B Psych at gmail.com. Again, we'd like to thank Marshall University as well as WMUL for giving us this platform to talk about mental health issues, family issues, community issues, attachment issues, and everything else in between. But as we always say, any other perspectives, ideas, or suggestions that you hear on this show are not represented by Marshall University, are not represented by WMUL, by any of their supporters, affiliates, or sponsors. But these are the sole perspectives of myself, Keelan Hinton, as well as Dr. Nate Chapman. So as we always say, while some of this advice may be gold, take this advice at your own risk. And Dr. Chapman always likes to remind us that while some of this may be therapeutic, this is not what, sir?
Well, you know, folks, if you need a therapist, we suggest you go. But we want you to know that you're not on the couch now. Hopefully you feel calm as if you are on the couch. Well, this is just two psychologists in our free time having conversations. And yes, it would be based on our knowledge and our profession. But this is not therapy. We haven't charged you. There's been no insurance billing or no self-pay.
Because that is the most important part of what we do. Just kidding.
Right.
So again, we thank those who continue to support. We thank those who continue to contact us, who bump into us on the street and at our jobs and on campuses, and let us know what they like, what they don't like, what they want to hear, what they want to see. Again, b2bpsych@gmail.com. If you have any questions or comments, looking forward, we're planning to have more book writers, more panels, and we're interested in the topics that people want to hear that relate to mental health, attachment, love, and relationships. So please, by all means, let us know. Okay. So again, today we will finally try to wrap up our series on trauma. Strike while the kettle's hot or black or whatever that saying is. But whatever it is, we tried to do it last week with the incident that happened at the Oscars with the Smiths. So that's why we attacked that. But we are going to go ahead today and try to wrap up our series on trauma, okay? And we've talked about trauma from a lot of different angles. We've talked about trauma in childhood. We talked a little bit about intergenerational trauma. How is trauma passed down from generation to generation? We touched on that, and we might touch on that a little bit today as we move forward to sort of wrap that up. But I think that that's where we started to end our last conversation on trauma, the idea of intergenerational trauma. Is it possible for trauma to be passed down through families? And if so, how? How can you inherit behaviors and traumatic experiences from events that you never experienced? How does that happen? Is that that's where we wrapped up. I believe that's where we stopped from the last conversation. So depending upon what Dr. Chapman is feeling, we might go there. We'll talk a little bit about relationships and trauma. If you have trauma, when do you reveal that trauma, or when do you open up or peel back those layers when starting intimate relationships? And then lastly, we'll talk a little bit about, you know, just make sure that we dispel any myths. We've talked about a lot about trauma over those few weeks, so any myths or concerns or misconceptions that we don't want people to leave with about trauma. So again, we'll probably do this in three segments. As I said, you know, the show is usually broken up in three segments, three 20-minute segments. We might talk for a minute about intergenerational trauma. Second segment, we'll talk a little bit about when do you open up about your trauma, and lastly, any myths that we don't want you to leave with, okay? So how you feeling today, Dr. Chapman? How are things for you?
Good.
Good deal. Things are well here. Things are well here in West Virginia. The sun is shining. We're happy. You know, COVID numbers are way, way down. So, you know, people ready for the sunlight and ready for the sun.
Y'all didn't get snow. I heard some people up that way got snow. Not you all?
No, it tried to, you know, Mother Nature tried to act up a little bit. We got a little rain. We got a little cold weather, But, you know, as I said, West Virginia, West by God, Virginia. This is the best state in the world. We are highly favored by the Almighty. So it missed us and it thrashed everyone else. And this is how we know we're special, sir. Thank you very much.
No, I agree. You know, it missed us too. So
he's jealous, people. He is jealous. He wishes he was here, but, you know, he's doing what he can in California. I understand what a sacrifice that he is for him.
Hard work, people.
Yes. So just a quick segment, and actually this is the intergenerational thing is something that I really honestly didn't think about until I got on and started talking, but we might give a few words just to wrap up where I think that we was heading last time, and that's the idea of intergenerational trauma. This idea of, can trauma be passed down from father to son, father to son, and from mother to daughter, mother to daughter. Is that even possible? What do you think, Dr. Chapman?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are definitely things that, what do they say, the sins of the father passed on to his son? Is that the phrase? I think there are definitely things that we experience as people, and then we become a parent, and then we may intentionally or unintentionally pass some of those things on to our kids. And it's interesting because you said, like, even if we don't experience it, I think it's like maybe you didn't experience the thing that was traumatic that led to the type of parents have that shaped the behaviors you have. So even though you didn't experience it directly, you're experiencing the consequences of what that trauma did to your parent that show up in a different way for you. As an example, you know, even now, like, you know, people are growing up in this COVID era, I guess, or whatever history we'll call it, but they're going to be on in this generation based on what's going on with COVID and how people live their lives to kind of secure themselves. Just like when there was the Great Depression, you know, and people were trying to preserve money, paying attention, being very frugal or extra frugal, even miserly. And they visited that miserly mindset on their children. Like, no, you have to save everything. No, you have to, we learned a lot of different things to the point where it might've been a bit much for the child of not understanding why they couldn't do things, why they have to save every penny, why it doesn't seem like their parents are willing to part with any resource.
Yeah.
And that's because of the trauma that they experienced. Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. A quick, simple example is I can remember two things that I was taught growing up is, one, whenever you sat down for dinner, you had to eat everything on your plate. We could not, like, we don't waste food, you eat everything on your plate, okay? And I think that mindset came from the trauma of sometimes my parents, like, food was scarce.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't waste food. And whenever you had food, you had to eat it, and you couldn't waste it. So it's like they grew up with the same mindset of, eat everything that's there. And I wonder if that mindset for some families is the residual of those parents, you know, food being scarce and there was nothing to waste and nothing could be wasted.
interesting because something like that, I'm sure a lot of people can relate to, you know, or people have heard that in some way, some form, shape, or fashion. But it's interesting because maybe you've seen those commercials. I don't know, what are they, Noom? Or it's like a dieting app. And it's like one of the commercials goes like that. Basically, this person has been overeating. And then there's something about learning the psychology about how they've learned they need to eat everything. So the point of that is that particular habit that's been formed from a scarcity may turn into a problem with obesity or something like that. You know, a person who eats everything in order to not be wasteful, but maybe it's not really good for them to eat everything that's on their plate.
Yeah, yeah. And the second point was, I can remember my parents, as much as they cared about me and loved me, told me, when you graduate, you're getting out of here.
My parents told me that too.
Like, you going to the army, you're getting a job, you're going to college, but you're leaving here because there's too many grown folks in the house. And it wasn't in a mean spirit, you know, it was just, this is how it has to be done. But for them, there are other kids in the house that we can't afford to take care of someone who's old enough to take care of themselves. That at that point when you became grown or an adult, you're a liability at that point because you're old enough to take care of yourself, and when you got other people to take care of and other siblings to take care of in the house. So again, you know, I really like your point about this idea of how, you know, it's the byproduct of what your parents or the people before you experienced that they might not even see it as trauma, but it just became like in this sort of ingrained part of how they think about the world, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting. Like, to your point there, right? So, you know, I got seven siblings, and I remember very, very well when my parents gave me that talk about, like, what are you going to do next? I think I was a junior. I wasn't the kid who had all these aspirations about what I was going to do. They called me in their room and were like, okay, so you're a junior now. This time next year, you're going to be a senior. You're going to be graduated. What are you going to be doing? Because you ain't going to be living here. And I mean, it's fine. I was ready to go and do my thing. And I think some of that mindset just helped me be where I am today. But it's interesting, that whole process. And I hadn't really thought about, like what you said, like, okay, maybe it had to do with resources, you know? Yeah. But just to that point about, like, okay, whoever your parents were with you might determine how they do it. If I'd be a kid who experienced that, I think if I had kids, I would do it that way today. Because hopefully, you know, I don't have kids, y'all. But if I did, I don't know if that would be traumatic or not. But I think I would do it that way because I think, in my mind, that would be teaching them responsibility. Yeah. But there are parents that have experienced something, some version of, okay, you got to be out, and that parent felt like that was too soon. So what do they do now? They do the opposite. They got their kid in their house with them until, all right, first of all, I'm not judging anybody for anybody who might, you know, hear it that way. But they got their kid in their house with them until that kid is like 50 or something. But that's a result of, like, no, I didn't want to be. I left the cradle too early. I don't want that for my kid. And so
you go to the other extreme.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. And I agree with you. For me, I was 17 when I graduated, and I was ready to go because it was expected, and that's what my sister before me did, and I didn't think anything of it. And I think it made me, my parents trusted that they taught me enough. They taught me who to stay away from. They taught me how to make good decisions. I mean, obviously, I was still 17, and I was still making mistakes in 18 years old. But it helped me grow up fast. It helped me become responsible. I learned how to wash my own clothes. I learned how to divide my own money up because I wasn't getting none. Whatever I had was what I had. So, like, I think that it, at a very early age, it taught me to be resourceful. It taught me to think about what I was doing. You know what I mean? And there was always, if trouble ever happened, I knew I could go back home. But I just didn't think of it that way as a net. Maybe subconsciously I knew there was a net there, but it was just a part of what I expected, maybe.
Right. Well, that's another thing to this point about how things can be intergenerational. If you're in a situation growing up where, for whatever reason, it might not even be your parents, not for lack of your parents trying, but you're in a position of scarcity, and then you also happen to be a resilient person, so you build your own wealth, you build your own circumstance, you know, you make your way out of nothing. But then what will you do for your kid? you basically gotta put this kid in a situation where they got golden gloves, they don't have to do anything. And that's a reverse manifestation of something that was had an imprint on.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I did. Like, my motto always has been, there were a lot of things, I guess my family looked at it like I babied my kids. They would say, well, he old enough to do it on his own. She old enough to do it on their own. You did. And my motto was always, just because I was old enough to do it, does that mean I should have been doing it? Right. Just because I could, it doesn't mean that I should have been, just because I was able to. So as best as I could, I allowed my kids to be kids as long as I could. And then I slowly, you know, my son started growing a mustache and I was like, okay, it's time to get things together. Like, once they maybe hit 9th, 10th grade, that's when I slowly start strapping on stuff. Like, I was always talking and teaching lessons, but slowly giving them independence. And then I didn't just kick them out. You know, they live in the dorms now. They don't stay with me. And then they'll graduate from the dorms to get in their own crib. And then you get your own crib, and then you'll move to some other city. I mean, I just believe in things happening in waves. And just because I could do it, I don't know if, you know, at 17 to 18, just go, hey, bye, you know. And it worked out for me. But I was wondering, just because I could do it, does that mean I should? And they grew up under different circumstances. So maybe there should be a process. So I didn't completely baby. I babied them for a while they were babies. But I was always mindful of trying to prepare them. You know, every parent's job, and particularly every father's job is to prepare your kids for the day that he's never there. I believe that mindful parents and mindful fathers, every day you're trying to prepare your kids for the day that I'm not going to be around, because I'm not going to be here forever. And you're always thinking about this. So you always have to think about parenting in that way. But that's neither here nor there. That's taking this in a different direction. But like you said, because of those experiences, I went to the other end of that spectrum just a little bit, because I was like, oh, it shouldn't have been that way. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And it gets just thinking about this and other people thinking about your own life. We're shooting it around anecdotally. But think about, you ask yourself, how was your childhood configuration? You know, like Dr. Keelan likes to talk about widgets, lots of times, your different schemas, the way you see the world. What did that look like? And then ask yourself, either does your schema now match it, or is it the opposite? And is it helpful or not? Like, other things that I see is sometimes people have grown up in a family where the parents were, I was going to say smothering, but that's not, they could be. But in this example I'm thinking about is that the critical, which is different than smothering, but it's still lots of attention. But it's lots of attention on what you're doing wrong and not necessarily lots of emotion, which will teach a child to be very cautious about what they do with emotions. And that might be something unintentionally that shows up in their child parent relationship. So we could talk about the opposites, but then sometimes you might not even recognize that you're doing the same thing because it's so normal to you. Like, that is what you grew up in. And then when you get somebody who is a little bit more open with those things, or I was wondering why you seem cold. You don't feel cold to you, because that's what you've grown up in. Then it'll seem odd. And it's not necessarily that it's right or wrong, but what's the impact it's having on your unique child? Because, you know, your child might be touchy, your child might be more or less not need those things. Or maybe you have more than one and you get to try to figure it out with all your kids. But yeah.
Yeah. Put a pin in this, because I think that I'm so glad you brought that up. I think this is a good show. The idea of how do two people find common ground and reconcile their two very different lives? You know, so all of this, and you go out into the world and you try to meet someone. And what happens when everybody in this family play football? And daddy or mama's or the other person's like, I don't want my kid. Like, how do you, you know what I mean? Like, when there's a clash in that way, how do we make those relationships last when everybody's bringing trauma and everybody's bringing baggage and everybody's bringing a perspective to the table? I think there are probably a lot of people. That's a really good point. I'm glad you brought that up. I think a lot of people would like to know, how do they negotiate those situations? I've had a few of those like come across my couch, quote unquote, so to speak. People trying to negotiate very different lifestyles that when you're dating, you don't talk about those things. People don't think to talk about, do you believe in spanking? If you believe in spanking, you say, yeah, but what does that mean for you? Well, we got hit with belts and pots and pans. Oh, well, I just meant a swat on the butt. Like, people don't talk about the specifics of relationships. They'll say, do you believe in being honest? Me too. But what does honesty mean? What does that mean? And does it take different shapes and forms?
Or even more, if they do talk about it, it might be that becomes more heated of a conversation than one would expect, because people don't recognize how attached they are to their views on things. And then they really, because of how attached they are to their views on that particular issue, they really aren't able to actually see the other person at all. Because what happens sometimes, depending on the state of how strongly you're attached to a view, you start to make some flawed assumptions about this person based on the side of that issue they're on.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that for the future, maybe we should think about putting the pin in that and revisiting that to some degree. But again, we up on the first segment, but I think I really like your point about your schema. And again, to remind people, a schema is just sort of the way you think the world works, the way you think family should work, the way you think love should work. And I think that what's interesting, no matter what it is, how you feel about the world is in some way, either directly or indirectly, connected to your experiences. Either you just like your mom and daddy, or you on the other end of the spectrum. And if you're nothing like them, even if you're nothing like them, it still stems from those experiences. That, and again, remember when we say trauma, we don't necessarily mean that your life was horrific, but just anything that happens in your life that is of significance, that sticks with you in some way, shape, form, or fashion. Okay, that is what we mean. We have to think. We have to change the way we think about trauma, because
an imprint, something that it shapes your trajectory. If we thought about this as lines in the or segments in the multiverse, once this thing happened to you, you took a different path.
Yeah, yeah. Dr. Chapman's on it today. He brought up the multiverse. My man is with it. And shoot us your thoughts about intergenerational trauma. Any experiences, any questions or comments you may have. Again, we want to give a quick station identification. This is WMUL 88.1 FM, Marshall University, on your dial. And again, this is Dr. Chapman with Dr. Hinton. And again, this is Brother to Brother. We're here with here talking about mental health, love, relationship, and community needs. And today, specifically, we're wrapping up our series on trauma. Okay? So, again, I thought it was just important that we sort of, I think that we ended with intergenerational trauma, and it was good that we touched on it as we move forward. So we'll move on and move forward, second segment again. If there's trauma in your life, if there are things that have left an imprint on you in some way, an emotional, psychological, or spiritual imprint on you in some way, the ultimate question that a lot of people would like to know is, when do you reveal those things to your partner, if at all? Are there some things that are just better off left in the past? Do you have to tell everything?
It's a good question. It's a good question. I was on a show a couple weeks ago where this question was explored, and it took me a minute to really think about it. And what do you think? I mean, I'm a cipher through my thoughts because I think I have different places I would go. What do you think? What say you?
My perspective on this is not popular, I don't think. My perspective is, if you got to debate whether you should tell them, you should tell them. Period.
When?
I think it should be at the point that you know when a relationship is starting to get serious. And anybody that says that they don't know that is lying. If you stay the night at somebody's house and they clean out their sock drawer and they saying, you know what, baby, you know what, you're over here a lot, so I just, you know, I took all my, you can put your little knickknacks over here, and I've got you, I got your toothbrush too, you know, and I know you like the kind of toothpaste with the baking soda in it, so I got a little bit, you know, and I got your juicy juice, you know, because I know you like your cranberry juice in the morning. Come on, you know, like, it's gone past going to the movies and having a little sexy sex, okay? When your relationships take a turn, when you're sitting at work and it's kind of like you texting all day and I wonder what she doing, I wonder what he doing, and it's become exclusive and y'all have decided that this is exclusive, then I think it's time to peel back layers. When we've decided that not only is this exclusive, but we're a thing. We're going to be a thing. It's just us. And when we're exclusive, because you could be exclusive and it not be a thing, let's both of us not deal with each other and figure out if we like each other. Like, that's the kind of lane I ride in. It's hard for me to figure out if, you know what I'm saying?
So you're exclusive, but you're not a thing. So, like, just basically, you're not hooking up with other people. Just
like, yeah.
You're my only hookup, just me and you.
Yeah. I like how the word hookup just rolls off Dr. Chapman's lips. Y'all hear that? We don't want to get into that. We're not going to put you on the couch today. Freudian.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, I think, and this is just my opinion, and maybe this is for another show, but I feel like if I'm into somebody and I'm trying to see if I dig them, I need to put my energy into that person and that person only to fill it out to see if this is it. My energy is for me, if my energy is split other places. And some people can do it, and some people can't.
All right, I'm taking notes because I think that this is a whole nother show, this particular topic. I think people want to hear it, but we won't do it today.
We won't do it today. But again, I just wonder, how can you fully and holistically figure out something for you if all of your that type of energy isn't going one direction? But something to think about. You know me, I say that all relationships start out as a lie. We all put our best foot forward. And then all of a sudden we fall in love. And then we think about, oh my God, all of this stuff that I didn't tell her. Trauma, I didn't tell her. She loves me now. He loves me now. What would she think if she knew I was locked up? What would she think if she knew I had a record? What would he think if he knew what I like to drink? So now I got secrets. So I don't think that people intend to have secrets, but they've been shamed for their trauma for so many years and for so long. They just hide it.
Right. You know, I think I've heard you say before, you know, when people date, they meet in the representative.
Yeah.
And it's like, how long are they meeting the representative? I think this question is tough, though. My dad told me a while back about this game show. I think it used to be on the TV. I think it was a game show because my mom likes game shows. It probably was. This was like a unique game show, though. I think it was probably called something like Dirty Laundry or something like that. Basically, it was like a blind dating situation. And then you figure out who you're going to date based on their dirty laundry. So they say, oh, you know, my name is Elise, and I clip my toenails in the bed. Okay. Like, and then you hear everybody's dirty laundry, and that's it. And based on their dirty laundry, you determine, you know, who you think you'd be able to tolerate.
Okay.
And so that's interesting because it's a whole nother way. But I think when it comes to people, as you were saying, people have been let down by a lot of people. And depending on what your trauma is, there's levels of how stigmatizing it may be. And the other thing is, I think when people start dating, I get your point about, like, when you know, you got the cranberry juice in the fridge and that special sock drawer, I get that. But sometimes when people start dating, they're not sure, like, when this is gonna be a thing, and then, like, how soon before I tell you. And then it also, cause it's like, along with that, people are probably thinking about, when should I talk about my deal breakers? And some people, whatever, trauma, if we're just being real, I think this is true. I would like to say, the optimist in me, that, you know what, some people, most people are not going to care about certain traumas you have. But I think it depends on the trauma. Some people are going to be like, nope, that's not for me. But in all fairness, they should have the opportunity to be able to say that.
Yeah.
And that's what's so painful about people when they're dating, because it's like, that's another show. But the whole idea is that when you date, you get to see if that thing works for you or not. But yeah. it's still a tricky when it comes to when you should tell, though, because I think there is a dance to that. And I also think that for some, there is a risk in being too vulnerable too early.
Yeah.
I think a part of me now, and this just me, maybe because I'm getting old and I'm getting older. If you ask me and it's day two, I'm going to tell you. Mm-hmm. And it's like, only because I have faced and owned those parts and pieces of me. So it's like, should I be embarrassed that you know? How does it affect me? If you know and we don't work out and you go and tell everybody. So?
Yeah.
It don't affect my kids. It ain't stopping my money and it's not stopping me from moving forward in life. So why do I really care? Like, how does it affect? So I think now I'm in a space that I'm like, this what it is. Yep, that happened. Or, yep, I've done this. Or whatever. I mean, not on the first day and been like, you know, I eat baby goats for a living. How you feel about all of this?
Right,
I mean,
right.
Obviously you don't want to run anybody off on the first, you know, right. In the beginning, you're just trying to figure out surface level stuff anyway. But when you both decide, we want this to move somewhere, then it's time to start peeling back layers. And like you said, I am a firm, and I've said this for years, I'm a firm believer in not taking somebody's right to choose away. People absolutely have the right to decide if they want to put up with your mess. And it's not for you to decide what is important or what's not important or how important something is or how important it shouldn't be, because a nothing to you can be a something to somebody else. And that's just a scary place to be, and I get that.
Right, and vice versa, though. You know, I've definitely encountered people who have been afraid to tell somebody about something that they thought was going to be a deal breaker for that person, but it wasn't. Or even told the person it was a deal breaker, like examples. I've heard people talk about, as people get older, it's the baby situation.
Yeah.
And one person say to the other, like, well, I'm not going to date you because I assume you want babies and I don't. Which then they would have the conversation with that person. They don't want babies. Or even they say it and that person still says, no, I think you would. So like,
yeah.
So I just want to say that sometimes the opposite is true. And people talk themselves out of revealing what's going on with them because they assume, because they've been wrong and all the other things about whatever their trauma is. Or a situation, don't have to be a trauma, like whatever situation is, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It's scary. Like you just said it best. Like when we have been ridiculed and shamed for these parts and pieces of us, it's scary. It is truly scary to share those parts and pieces of yourself with somebody, and you don't even know if it's gonna work. And then how many friendships have we had that we've revealed deep dark secrets with people, and then something happened, a relationship fell out, and they went in the street and told all your business.
Yeah, that's true.
Not even from an intimate relationship, just friends. So it's like, I can understand that there are parts and pieces of us that we probably don't want to share with people anyway. But I do think that, I don't know if it's necessary. I think you can have a healthy, successful relationship and your partner don't know everything about you. I think that that's possible. I mean, obviously, I think there are millions of people. If we were to poll the average relationship, which is another show and another question for another day, which is something that we should do, we should probably put a poll on Facebook or something, an anonymous poll, and see how many, is there something about you that your husband don't know or that your wife don't know or that your partner don't know? And I can guarantee you that deadline will be well into this, probably 70%, 80%. So I think that most people have something about them that their partners don't know. What is that? I wonder if relationships are just in a different space when your partner knows everything. Is there a different level of comfort? And which is why I think people who are friends or best friends, they seem to have the dopest relationships. Why? Because I know you ain't nothing. When we was cool and we wasn't thinking about dating, I saw the crust of you. I know you raggedy. I saw you run the streets, and I still chose to hang with you. So now that we're friends, there are no secrets at all. To be in a relationship, and that comfortable that you know that someone can know your trauma and know the crust of who you are and they still choose to love you, I wonder if there is a different level of something there than the husband and wife or the partner-partner game. Well, we all have our secrets, but it doesn't affect us. So something to think about.
I mean, I'm sure there is. I mean, I think in some regard, outside of the couples that naturally do that, there are circumstances where people can do that with their friends and don't do that with their significant other. And for whatever reason that works. But I think the other thing is when we talk about being vulnerable and being able to disclose what's going on with you, the process is very individualized based on lots of different things, what that person has experienced in the past, and it's not always cut and dry. And the other thing is it's trial and error based on that person, that new person that you're talking to now. Like, we can't assume that, as much as we would like to, that everybody handles information in the same way.
Yeah.
But that being said, I think when it comes to knowing everything about your partner, I don't think there's anything unhealthy about not knowing everything about your partner. I think the person that assumes that you should know everything about your partner does not recognize that your partner is an individual. Okay. I'm not saying it should be lots of big secrets. I'm just saying you're not one, you are two. But in addition to that, when it comes to figuring out what you should share and what you shouldn't.
That's the trick.
If you're not sharing significant parts of yourself, then you're not really letting this person know who you are.
But the point is who gets to decide what's significant? Is the person holding the cards? And you never know. And you can trick and tell yourself. We can trick and tell ourselves all day, this isn't a big deal. But how do I know that that's not a big deal to them?
Right.
So then what we do is we play this game. You know what? I got this friend. Guess what he told me? He told his wife. He said this. What do you think about that? And then we test people. We throw these feelers and these testers out there to see. And then he or she goes, ugh, that's disgusting. You go, well, I guess you ain't going to find that out. And that's how we do. We play these games. We test each other. But that's the thing. I agree with you. But it's like the linchpin is that is that I have the person with the trauma is holding the cards and deciding what you should and shouldn't know and what's important and what's not important. That's my thing is that fair?
Well, I think that for those listening who are like, so-and-so that I'm dating didn't tell me this until then, or like, I hope so-and-so is listening because they should let their stuff out. I think what's helpful when you're the partner is if you create the right environment where that stuff can come out. I remember one time that I had a person I was doing therapy with, and we were doing individual therapy, working at a place where there was also groups. I was co-running this group with another person. This person happening to be an older white woman. And I mean, this client was black, just for reference. But when we got in this group, this client spilled some pretty traumatic things that she didn't spill with me. And I was just like, whoa, like, wow, didn't know all that happened. Like, oh man, like, okay. And what it came down to for this particular situation was that since I was a black male, I reminded her of some of her mother's boyfriends that she had, so it changed the dynamic. Yeah. Now, that's a very specific example. Most people are not going to find themselves in that situation. But the point of the story is you create environments that can be inviting of situations outside of your own personal characteristics. Like, there's nothing I could do to change the dynamic of who I am as a person, as a black male. But there are other things you do. And as you said, to your point about testing, couples test in this way. They might not intentionally be testing, but they might just be like, oh, I had this happen to me today. Those who are faithful with a little bit can handle a lot. You know, do you listen to me when I tell you about little annoying stuff that's happening to me? If you don't, then I know you're not going to be able to handle me tell you about how this happened to me when I was six.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good stuff. That's dope. That's good stuff. You do know that we still haven't given an answer to this question. When do you tell? If at all.
Well, you gave an answer. You gave your answer. You know, when you get ready to move in the spot, that was your answer.
Not necessarily move in, but we all know when things have taken a turn. when you've both decided and declared this is something serious and we're going to see where this is going to go, then I believe that is the point that you start peeling back layers and talking about childhoods and, you know what I'm saying? I think that that's probably the point to slowly start peeling back the layers of the onion and start talking about some of those things. You know, because I believe that whatever it is, I just still believe that bits and pieces and echoes, and that's a better way to put it, it's like an echo. It's like echoes, it's not the scream, but it's sort of bits and the echo of what happened to you may still reside and manifest in your relationship. If you get married, in your marriage, how you raise your kids, it might not pop up in your relationship, but it may pop up when you have kids. And then you start behaving and rearing your kids in a certain way, and you thought you was done with that. You see what I'm saying? So, like, if it does pop up with your kids, your partner knows, or they never heard about X that happened when you was 10 to 15. And it's kind of like, hold on, if I'd have known this and I knew you was going to do my kids like this, I wouldn't have had kids with you. You see what I'm saying? But we stuck now. And I think that happens a lot, is that it might not affect me and you, but when we had kids, you know what I'm saying? I got spanked and I don't want you touching my kids. I don't want them my kids. I had them kids. I don't want you touching my kids. And it's kind of like, you know, oh, well, spanking doesn't affect me and you. But knowing that you had a hard past like that and you was borderline abused or abused, if I want to have kids with, do we need to think about parenting? Do we think about how we're going to discipline? Like we could have those talks beforehand. But that was something that happened to you as a kid. You didn't think it was going to affect us. It was a long time ago. It's not affecting how I interact with him or her, so I just don't talk about it. See, that's the kind of stuff I'm talking about.
Right, and I think that, to your point there, that's what that illustrates why it's hard for people to tell it, because they think that's what's going to happen. And the reality is, whatever your trauma is, might have an imprint on you, but it's not predictable. And people sometimes try to, oh, this happened to you, this is what I can expect. For example, we go to that one, like, oh, you were abused as a child, you're probably going to be abusing children. No, that's not the case for everyone. And so the whole thing would be I don't have an answer about when, but I would say start testing it out.
Yeah.
Okay, let me tell you about this situation with Becky, my friend. Hopefully it's really a situation with Becky and you're not just doing the oh for a friend thing. But you can still hear how they respond to some situation that has nothing to do with how they judge it and those things. And sometimes people flip the script. So they judge other people harshly when you tell them about some other person. Then when you tell them it's you, they're like, oh, to your face. Oh, there's nothing. But generally, the behaviors that they're doing for others are probably gonna be more predictive of how they actually feel about you, just whether they're comfortable to say it or not yet.
Yeah, yeah. So test it out. Feel it out. But the point is are we both in agreement that it 100% completely shouldn't just be left alone?
Right.
Okay, good deal. Again, quick station identification. We're up on the last segment. This is WMUL 88.1 FM on your dial. Again, we have Dr. Chapman and Dr. Keelan Hinton. And this is Brother to Brother, and we are finishing up our segment on trauma. So lastly, I think that's a good place to segue into our last segment, and that is any myths or things that we want to know about trauma. And one of the things that I was thinking of is true or false, Dr. Chapman, if I just forget about it, it'll go away.
Yeah, no, that's not going to happen, son. It's the old refrigerator analogy I think we've used on this talk show before. So, you know, if you put something in the refrigerator, maybe if you haven't had this experience yet, folks, but if you put something in the back of the refrigerator and you forget about it and it has an expiration date, it's going to smell sooner or later, right? It's going to come out. Even if you got so many things in the refrigerator, you can't see exactly what it is. You're going to be like, something ain't right. I don't know what it is. It smells. And then eventually you're going to maybe just decide not to use the refrigerator at all, which means you're going to be limited some of your functioning. For our example, that's your feelings. And if you're not opening that refrigerator, which symbolizes your emotions, not only are you avoiding bad emotions, you're avoiding good emotions too. So forgetting about something is one, that's one consequence. The other consequence is it might just show up physically or in other ways that don't seem to make sense to you, because that's sort of your subconscious way of dealing with the stress that's related to it.
Yeah. I think that we can both collectively say is that for whatever reason, if it was something that was traumatic, and again, trauma being defined as something that has had some sort of imprint on you mentally, cognitively, spiritually, or emotionally in some way, some sort of experience that has stuck with you for some reason or another, it's not just going to disappear. It's not just going to go away. You can't wish it away. You can't wash it away. You can't leave it. You just can't leave it. You can't just move forward without it, depending upon what it is. Okay? And I just think that sometimes those things have to be dealt with. Now, how health professionals deal with those traumas might be very different. Some just choose to deal with the byproduct, the behaviors that are byproducts of it. For me personally, again, I've been very vocal about schema therapy. For me, with the clients that I deal with, like, it feels, at least from my experiences, it feels that it's important for them to know where things come from, to make a connection between their inability to make connections in their current relationships. And this all started from abandoned, my father abandoned me, or my mother abandoned me, or like for whatever reason, making those connections seem to be important for people, because it lets them know, oh, I'm not crazy. This does come from somewhere. I've had people, multiple people, vocally say out loud and start to cry and say, wow, I'm not crazy. This did come from something. This came from somewhere. I'm just not out here wilding out, just a broken shell for no reason. So how you deal with those traumas is important, but at least from what I've seen, you know, trauma is like weed. If you cut your grass and just lop the top off, they're going to grow back. You got to pull weeds up by the root. And that's just, and at least that's, and if you don't, those weeds are going to continue to grow back in some way, and I think that trauma will continue to manifest itself. And it doesn't matter, it's important. You know, I think Dr. Chapman he spoke about this, you know, in the series before, like, it won't manifest itself in the same manner with all people. So, I mean, you may want to speak to that. Some people may be physical. It may be high blood pressure. It may come up with your kids. It may come up with how you interact in relationships. It may come up with how you interact in society. And like, you know, whatever your thing is, you know, it's not, you know, it's not going to manifest the way it does for a friend. You know, it's going to be specific and unique to you.
Yeah, and a couple things I wanted to say. So given that analogy about weeds, and I don't know if you guys grew up in households where you had parents that really liked their yard to look a certain way, and you had the joy of picking up weeds, there's always another weed. Like, I hated that job. But in addition to that, you know, sometimes you have weeds that if you don't really manage them, they grow into whatever else is growing. And they become a part of whatever else is in that particular garden or wherever it is. So that's important to keep in mind. When you're talking about manifestation and how it can happen, I think there's so many ways it could show up that each way could be unique to not only a person, but the bi-directional interaction that they're having with people. So you might have one imprint that has 10, 20 different variations of how you react, which doesn't seem to make a lot of sense, but it's very specific to all these different situations that unlock different schemas that determine how they're going to react. And the other thing is, unfortunately, I mean, data I've seen is that sometimes when people have had significant traumas in their life early on, they are more likely to have other traumas later on in life and a pattern of them. And it could be sometimes that one thing, for example, if you happen to be, you lost your parents to divorce, and that's like a popular thing that lots of people are dealing with, early on in life, or however else you lost your parents, you don't really feel the effects of that emotionally until you have a breakup later on in life. Then you have the compounding fact of the breakup, in addition to these other echoes, like you said, these echoes of these other things that come up every time you have like that type of situation.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. This is, we got 5 minutes left and we're, we may have to pick back up with this next time, because it's the idea that I think you're exactly right. Because what happens when we can't forget, no matter how young you are, when something traumatic happens to you, you're going to instantly try to adjust. Kids are resilient. Kids are resilient. That resiliency comes from mentally and emotionally, you figure out a way to move forward and cope. And with no ability to truly reason, with no ability to think about the world in a sophisticated way when you're younger, a lot of times you will choose things to help you get through the situation that may not be the healthiest. So, like he said, I'm saying all that to say, something bad happens to you as a child. So, you know, to not be abused, you shut down or you don't talk a lot. Well, now you're not making friends at school. And then that compounds into something else. And then that compounds into something else. So something is happening at home and you develop this protective mechanism to keep yourself, you know, safe at home. But then it expands out to when you try to make friends, you can't make friends. Maybe fighting is a way you protect yourself at home. And now you, somebody say something wrong at school, you're fighting at school, or you shut down and don't speak. So people won't say anything to you, to try to be invisible. Well, now you're invisible at school and nobody notices you at school, or you're not making friends. So the, like you said, I think that's important, that when things happen to you when you're young, you're not sophisticated.
Right.
None of us are. So it's like you just start doing stuff to try to survive. And a lot of times, a lot of those things might not be, while it's to protect you, they might not be the healthiest, and it'll cascade down of domino into some other problems later in other areas of your life later on. I don't know.
Yeah, and sometimes another thing that could happen is a form, if it's not dealt with and it's still there, and say you tried to just numb it, or you're not even aware of it, sometimes you're not, because it happened so early that you were precognitive, it's like kind of on your psyche, but you don't really even think about or aware of it. Sometimes we can regress. So say you were doing some of these things early on, you know, you had something happen, you're separated from a parent early on in life, and you have developed some type of coping mechanism. Maybe that's, or it's not even a coping mechanism at all. You felt isolated. And then later on, when something like that happens, a breakup, you isolate.
Yeah.
It's like a form of regression, which you won't even notice yourself fully going into. And it'll be hard because you're gonna have some normal things you go through with that phase. But if someone were to see this, however old you, and this other you when you were a kid, they would see mirror actions.
Yeah. And that is such a poignant point. The idea of, as we get older, and I wonder if that's a hard concept for people to really catch on. What do you mean I'm gonna act like I'm 8 years old, I'm 35? What do you people feel like they're grown, so, but it's like, when you get in, that's an important point to keep for me, is that when you get in similar situations when you get older, the thing about coping skills is this, is that once a coping skill works for us, we keep it until it doesn't anymore. So if isolation kept you safe as a child, if nothing, no matter how old you get, if nothing happens to teach you that that doesn't work, it's going to be your first go-to, because your mind will always remember that this has worked for me in the past. So, like Dr. Chapman said, somebody leaves me or something doesn't work out. When I get older, it doesn't matter how old you are. All your mind remembers is your mind goes to its bag of tricks. And it will always go to the first and most reliable one. And it doesn't matter if you just developed it. It doesn't matter if you developed it at 15 or 5. You're going to always go to your go-to if it's worked for you in the past, until it doesn't work anymore. So when you isolate and you isolate, and then you meet that one person that says, "No, we not doing this. We gonna talk." Okay, now what you mean? You know, we gonna talk, and then all of a sudden working. So you got to think of something else on the fly. Now, what you do in that moment is a whole nother conversation for another day. Do you leave? Do you shut down? Do you get aggressive because this is supposed to work and it's not working now? Now, what do I do? So something to think about, you know. Again, it's 10 o'clock. This time absolutely flies by. I don't know if this Dr. Chapman and I will talk. We will speak. And is this, I don't know if this was supposed to be a wrap up, but typically what happens is, as we do, a lot of these conversations are organic, and we appreciate people's patience. We always end up developing more questions than answers. And I think that is a part of this show and the essence of this show that people appreciate, is that when it comes to human behavior, there's so many different nuances, and there never really is a right or wrong answer, you know. But we all just out here trying to live our best life, trying to protect ourselves and trying to heal ourselves as best as we can. And sometimes maybe not always in the best way, you know, or we're not always doing the healthiest thing. But I think it's always best to remember that, again, as I tell all my clients, give yourself some grace. Especially if you've experienced trauma and you're going through a lot, you're going through a lot, or you have gone through a lot. Like, give yourself a break. We give these suckers in the street that hurt us way more grace than we give ourselves. Give yourself some grace. If you've been through a lot, I've gone through a lot, and I'm out here, we're all trying to protect ourselves, but most importantly, we're all trying to heal ourselves as best as we can. So something to think about. Again, we thank those who continue. Again, B2B Psych, B the number 2 B, PSYCH, B2B Psych at gmail.com. For those that have any questions, comments, or suggestions, again, any of the perspectives, ideas, or suggestions you hear on this show don't represent Marshall University or WMNUL, any of their sponsors, affiliates, or supporters. They don't represent anyone that we work for in the consulting work we do, but these are just our sole perspectives and ideas. We want to make sure that's clear. As we always say, we thank you all and we love you all for continuing to support us. You are the reason that WMUL and Marshall University allows us to have this platform. So please continue with your support, questions, and ideas and perspectives. We appreciate you. As we always say, graveyards are full of regret and potential. When you die and leave this place, and one day we all will, make sure that you die empty. Don't take nothing to the grave with you. Everything you want to do, do your damnedest to try to do it. Everybody you love, make sure that they know you love them, and make sure you're doing something that sets your soul on fire. And I wish you all peace and blessings, and Dr. Chapman will take us out as always.
So what to take away from our series on trauma? Hopefully you take away a few things. I think one thing is thinking about how you create and make space for people in your life who have had or been imprinted in some way. How are you listening to people? Are you, and in your everyday interactions, are you showing people that you're open to hearing and seeing who they really are and what they really experience? It's probably likely that sometimes, even if a person is not doing it willingly, there is a piece of them that wants to show you who they are, but they haven't felt safe to do so, and that's why they're not. The other thing that you can take away is this: you take a look at your own life and ask yourself, how am I showing up in different places? Is it mirroring my early experiences? And if so, is that fruitful or not fruitful? Hopefully you can be objective enough to see if it is, because it's probably complicated. Probably some things are fruitful, some things are not. And if you have that, take an honest assessment of where you're at, then you can ask yourself, are these things that I'm using, or these behaviors that may be imprinted on me early in life, things that I want to continue to do? And then you can make a decision. I'm not saying, folks, that this decision is going to be easy, that you're going to just do a one and done. It's like going to the gym. It's going to be something that you're going to have to do, and you got to make it a way of life. But at the end of the day, if you want to be fruitful, you want to be successful, you want to be the best version of you, even with imprints, you'll just have to be thoughtful about it. And I don't mean, when I say thoughtful about, I don't mean being obsessed about everything you do, but I just mean asking yourself the question, is this useful for me? Is this not? If it's not, what can I do to change? Maybe I can't do it by myself. Can I get a team to help me? I believe you can. The last thing I would say is tap into that little boy or little girl that's on the inside of you. The one that is trying to be heard, trying to be understood, not just by the other people in your life, trying to be understood by you. If you can understand the little boy or little girl in your life, maybe you'll provide a window or a door for them to be understood by the other people in your life. Peace and blessing, folks. We'll see you all next time.
Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Here we are again.
Brace yourself. 88.1 WMUL FM Huntington.